Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I am the founder of Mixergy.com and the guy who wrestles with technology. And today, after about an hour of working with today's guest, I'm proud to tell you that I've got Joseph Winkie on. He is the founder of Healthy Surprise. Get this. Here's the idea behind the business. Your healthy person cares about the ingredients in food. You sign up for a subscription on his site, and he ships you healthy food as a surprise each month, but you can pick the interval. In addition to that, he also has another group of customers who are corporate buyers who just buy it to give out those boxes as gifts. I invited him here to tell the story of how he did it, to find out where exactly in the world he is. I think the background is beautiful and I want to talk about that. And hopefully he'll tell us about the revenue and lots of little details like that. Joseph, welcome.
Hey, welcome. Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
We're going to talk in a bit about how you were working for your dad, but before you were working for your dad, what was your relationship like with him growing up?
It was really good. I would say I was definitely closer with my mom. She was really active in taking me to like origami class and dancing class and kind of, you know, being a really engaged mother, where my dad worked most of the time, but I had a great relationship with him. What was kind of interesting is how that ended up flipping, you know, in my 20s, where I kind of grew up close to my mom and spending most of my time with her, and then for 7 years worked with my dad on a daily basis.
Were you the kind of kid who would go to his dad's office and work with him and fantasize about being like him?
Fantasize is a strong word.
Okay.
My dad had a cool job. He was the publisher of the newspaper in the town I grew up in, and we would like as a field trip we would kind of go to the newspaper and the whole class would kind of go and he'd give a tour, and that was kind of cool. And it was cool to see him in that capacity as the leader of the organization. But I don't really think emulating a lot like on a conscious intentional level that I wanted to be like him. But maybe on a Freudian level, like subconsciously, when I look at myself now and I try to study my own behaviors, I see myself repeating a lot of the same things my father does. So,
Did you do when you were growing up that now you're finding yourself repeating?
You know, the things that are coming to mind, like in this example, aren't so much when I was growing up, but even when someone, like if I'm working and someone comes into my kind of office space to interrupt me and says like, "Hey, Joe," my dad would always lean back and grab the arms of the chair and then put his hands back and kind of like talk to the person. And I do the same thing. And it's a weird thing to like realize I'm moving through that series of behaviors and I'm just mimicking my father directly. So that's just kind of a weird, you know, I don't know if that's me wanting to be like him or me just, my brain is like, this is how we handle this situation. When someone walks in, you know, I'm parroting this behavior, but...
I'm asking for a reason, and I think the audience will see it. There was a pivotal moment in your career that your dad factored into, and I'll get to that in a moment. But I had one other question about your background. In college, you started a business, right?
Yeah, I did.
What was that company?
Snap Imaging.
What does that mean, Snap Imaging?
So what we did was I went to the University of Florida, which is a big Greek school. There's a large fraternity and sorority population. And they have people had heard of them. There's these frat parties that occur. And there's a service that would come. They were called Flash Photo. And they would come to the parties. And if you were there, you could just kind of say, "Hey, Flash." And the photographer would come over, take a picture of you. This was back right at when digital cameras were kind of coming. No one even really heard of them at the time. And they would take these photos and then... at the end of, you know, the next day, or actually not the next day, but like a week or two later, in the mess hall, they would have these big composite sheets with all the photos that were like little thumbnail strips, and you could sign up underneath it to order the ones that you liked. So that's what Flash Photo did.
I see. And so you built this company up, and how did it do?
Well, what happened was they didn't really provide a really good service. You know, I mean, the idea was great about what they would do, but their execution really was lacking. And I was vice president of my fraternity at the time. And the guy who kind of liaised between them and us one day just came to see me and was kind of just complaining about, you know, these guys, they take forever and the money. And I was just thinking that it was kind of a cool thing that they did. I mean, they went to all these parties And they took all these photos of people and all these cute girls. And I said, well, I said, we could do a better job than that. And he's like, yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be hard. They're not really doing a good job. And I was like, well, there are these things called digital cameras where we don't need to get all this film. And like, we could, you know, it could be cheap to do this. We could just do it with our parties and then see if it works. And so that's kind of how it started. I mean, it wasn't like this grand plan, like let's start a business. It was just us kind of having a beer, you know, griping about the universe and then thinking like we could change it. You know, we could make it better. And then we did, and we started the business, ended up getting about half of the fraternities and sororities to start letting us do their parties. And then the other company kind of got hip to us, and they had signed service agreements with the fraternities and sororities that said like, hey, if you have a party, you know, we will show up with the camera. But the obligation is like, you have to have us show up every time. You know what I mean? Like, so we'll provide the service. We'll always show up if you always invite us over there. So that was like the service agreement.
And so they locked themselves in, even though they were crappy.
Yeah, exactly. And then what happened was once we started having a business, they went to the fraternity and sorority presidents and basically threatened to sue them. And they said, hey, if you don't honor this agreement, we're going to sue you, da, 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 da. You know, and these kids are like, it's enough to be managing school and their house and right. All these, you know, the whole thing. And then to get a lawsuit involved, they're like, look, Joe, I love you, but you know, you're good, but you're not worth me getting involved in a lawsuit of it. So that was actually another pivotal moment in my life. I remember being on the phone with my dad and my mom and kind of talking to them about this and saying, hey, I got this business. Like, it's hot. It's happening. It's growing. It's fun. But there's this lawsuit thing. And they kind of said, hey, you know, you're not in school to be a photographer and go to parties all day. You're studying building construction. So, you know, what do you really want to do? And I made decisions to kind of shut it down, not go into lawsuits, and focus on my studies.
Building construction is what you were, what you went to school to study. Why yeah. that?
You know, that's a good question. And if I have to look back, I would point it to a conversation I had with my parents when my dad switched over from being a publisher of the newspaper. He ended up buying a construction company, a plumbing company. And his partner, the guy that he bought into with, was really big into kind of construction associations. And he told them about this really great program that the university at Florida had. And I had always liked construction and the idea of what structures meant to humanity and how it kind of symbolized the zeitgeist of the time through buildings. So I was interested in it, but it wasn't like I grew up my whole life thinking I wanted to go into construction. And that kind of conversation nudged me into that trajectory. And it was very interesting because I try to be very conscious, like thoughtful, mindful, conscious of my decisions now, because that wasn't I don't think it was a very conscious decision of me to go into that program. It was more of my parents kind of shifting the target in that direction. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does, because everything that I see about you and that I read about you just tells me that what you studied in school just doesn't fit. And now I understand how that happened. And then you went to work for your dad. Was that a conscious decision or also something that you just got carried away and did?
So I at a school, I got recruited to go work for a large construction management company in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. So I did that for about a year and worked for the big giant corporation. They were the third largest construction manager, I think, in the world at the time. And that was really, really valuable to go see what the cubicle life kind of is and how the big...
It's so different from the background that we have right now on camera.
It's not the Bonsai Pipeline, you know?
we'll talk about that later, why you're there and what you're doing.
Yeah.
So, all right. And then you went to work for your dad.
Yeah. So what happened was, and this is actually a good anecdote, was I was working at this construction company, and I was probably more qualified than my boss in a lot of different ways. What I did in this construction company is one site in a trailer with my boss, who was like 45. He drove 3 hours in every day from West Virginia, and he'd come in with a big dip in his mouth and a coffee. And he'd go have his morning constitutional, which is he'd go in the bathroom for, you know, half an hour first thing every morning. And I had a admin who was like a middle-aged woman who didn't really take care of herself and wasn't very happy. And then a job superintendent, and it was, and he was out probably 30, late 30s. So there were these three older people and then me in this trailer. And I ended up doing most of my boss's job, like, for him, because I was trying to learn and do everything. And I didn't respect my boss, which is one of the biggest things for anybody. And he started kissing up and, you know, kicking down on me when things would go wrong. And I just kind of looked at the trajectory I was on, and, you know, on the trajectory to become this guy. You know, I mean, I was going to be working.
You're going to become him with your cup of coffee in the morning and your 30 minutes.
Yeah, on a job site, you know, saying, but I was going to be, you know, having some whippersnapper kid underneath me being the engineer, and I was going to be, and I was just thinking, you know, there's more to life than being on some construction site in a trailer, and this didn't really work, and I didn't like the weather in D.C. So I talked to my parents, and they said, you know, well, the business we bought is growing. We really could use a general contracting license. And I was qualified at the time to get my license. So it just seemed like a big win to go work with my parents, who I love, get out of the winter, and go kind of build something and not be in a trailer.
And then how was it to work for your parents? Because I know it was coming up.
I loved it, man. It was really, really, really great. My parents are fantastic, very, very supportive. I learned a lot. So I really have nothing bad to say in that regards. But
okay. But then when you went to your dad and said, hey, it's time for me to be a partner.
Yeah, so we started a new division of the business. After these big hurricanes, Wilma, and I forget the other names, but in like 2006 or so, these big hurricanes came through, and we're not going to have power. So one of the sales guy had an idea to start a new division where we sold these standby generators, which are these big, like, car-sized things that power up your house if the power goes out. And he went to my dad and said, hey, let's start this business. And my dad was like, well, why don't you come, Joe, and just sit along and, like, kind of take notes at these meetings. And so, you know, after like three or four meetings of taking notes, you know, I started helping out and I was organizing the papers. And then, like, after, you know, three or four months, I was kind of doing all the work. You know, I was the one kind of managing all the projects. The other guy was making the sales. And I just kind of realized that I was building this business for these two other guys. I mean, one of them happened to be my dad, and the other guy happened to be this really cool guy. But I was just kind of the helper there, and I wasn't getting paid for it. So I kind of had this epiphany moment where I realized that even though it was my dad and my father loved me and would never want to do anything wrong and is always looking out for me, he's not like, you know, I had to look out for me. And it was a big, big kind of epiphany in my life that realized even the people that love you, that catch you, aren't always going to put, like, going to do the best for you. Like, you have to do that for yourself. And I realized I really needed to step up and take control of my own life and go to these two other guys and say, hey, you know what? I started this with you guys. I'm doing the work, and I need an equal seat at the table. And if that's not going to work, then I got to go. And this seems to be a recurring theme in my life.
You've had that happen before or since?
Well, no, it's what happened down the road with my father later.
What do you mean? With your dad?
Well, I mean, that's eventually what happened. So that happened with the generator company, and that ended up working out. I ended up getting ownership in that business. But as far as working with him for the 7-year duration, eventually what caused me to leave was, you know, me wanting to have equity in the company and me wanting to you know, not be sitting at the kiddie table and just being his child as opposed to being his business partner. And when I tried to assert that for myself and realized that, you know, he wasn't going to do it for me, we couldn't come to terms, you know, I ended up leaving.
I see. And then you talked to him. Here's what I heard from the pre-interview with April. You came to him and you said, hey, Dad, I've been working here for 7 years. It's time for me to be, you know, to step up to the adult table from the kiddie table. And you asked for equity and he laughed. He said, he did.
So, yeah, that's pretty much what happened. Well, him and my mom laughed together. So it was kind of
Did it hurt at the time? I mean, now we're looking back and we're seeing it as an opportunity to fire you up. And it's something that got you to go in this direction that is so phenomenal. I can't wait for people to hear what you did with this business. But at the time, did it hurt?
No, it didn't really hurt.
Why not?
Not really. I mean, well, what was your question? What hurt?
Why didn't it hurt?
Why didn't it hurt? So to tell you why it didn't hurt, I got to tell you how it ended. So, I mean, yeah, when they kind of laughed at me, when they laughed at me the first time when I sat down with them, I just got back from Africa. I'd done some soul searching, and we had been talking about, having an ownership thing, and it just didn't seem like it was a fair deal to me. And when I was away in Africa, I kind of meditated on this. I said, well, what would make sense for me? And I mean, throw out all the stuff that we talked about before. What's the deal that I want? You know what I mean? Not because people bracket things, and I was being bracketed as far as what, you know, they thought I deserved. And I said, well, I probably should go do my own thing. But if I were to stay, you know, what would it take for me to stay? And I kind of threw out everything, all the rules, and I wrote that down. And then when I got back to the States and I had dinner with them, I said, look, this is what I want. And it was kind of ridiculous to them compared to what they thought where I should be. So they laughed. And I kind of expected it. So that didn't really hurt that much. And then over the next couple of weeks, we talked about it a lot. And I remember there was this one day I'll never forget. I was sitting at the kitchen with my mom, and she's going to watch this interview, so this will be funny. But as we were going back and forth, I thought of it. It was like there's a little gauge in my head about her, like, understanding, you know, my point and then her point. And she was kind of like slowly, as I could see, like, she was kind of getting where I was, what I was, you know, she's picking up what I was putting down. And it got to a point where I was just about to tip her over to my side. And time did this really weird thing where slow down really, really, really slow. And I kind of had this whole conversation with myself, and it hit me like a ton of bricks, you know, like, boom, you're going to get what you want right now. You're going to become an owner in this company, and you're going to be working in construction and living in your hometown, you know, for at least the next 10 years. And at that moment, that was like the scariest possible thing that could happen. And it was a weird thing too, because it was what I wanted. You know what I mean? I was sitting here arguing for it. And in the middle of arguing for it, my brain just kind of like was like, you know, wait a minute, hold up. This is not what you want. You need to go out and do your own thing and do something great and be your own man. And immediately, as soon as that happened, I mean, I just kind of switched the conversation and just slowly started backpedaling. Okay. I was like, you know what? I think you guys are right. I think I'm being unreasonable. I think I got to go.
Wow, I wonder if now if your mom's listening to this and she does remember and saw that moment in your eyes.
I think she probably will know that conversation. It was a pivotal one. It was the one where I ended up, you know, totally ending a wonderful 7-year career and packing up all my stuff and just kind of heading out west, not knowing where I was going to go.
So I want to get to Healthy Surprise, but I think there's a stop along the way that we should talk about. This is backpacking.com. Is that the first thing that you did?
Yeah, that was the first idea.
I went to that site and it's not up anymore. What was it?
I just took it down because I'm not running it, and it was just costing money to keep it going. But I wish you had seen it because it was beautiful and it all worked. The idea was, you know, I've constantly, through my different businesses, have tried to solve problems that I've experienced and I think would help other people have good experiences. And I had done a bunch of world traveling. I've been to over 30 countries, I think. And throughout the different trips, I kind of wanted to share it with people. And I looked at what were the big obstacles for people to go on one of these trips. And the first one is just the cost. So the cost in money and in time. And you say, I'm going to take 2 months off and I'm going to go to Hawaii, or I'm going to go to, you know, Kenya and do a safari. I'm going to buy the airfare. And that's expensive. But then once you do that, you still have to do a couple other things. You got to get visas if you're going anywhere that doesn't get part of the Schengen zone. You've got to get vaccinated if you're going into, you know, kind of some exotic locales. And then you got to find someone that's going to take you on this trip. If you're going to do like a safari or something, and they usually have like a 50 to 70 item packing list, they'll email to you and say, okay, hey, by the way, go pick up, you know, the electrical adapter for Europe and the mosquito net and, you know, a backpack and a sleeping bag and all these different items. And it really could be overwhelming for someone to have to do all the stuff, you know, decide I'm going to go on this big trip and I'm going to go get the vaccinations and I'm, you know, it's overwhelming. So I looked at those three and I said, where could I help? And there's a lot of Visa Express like services that will help you do that. And I'm not a doctor and I didn't want to plan to become one, but I like the idea of being able to use the expertise I had after having traveling so much and knowing what was good quality gear for someone to bring to go curate all those items, put it together into a great package and then sell that and basically sell the convenience to the customer. So when the travel broker said, hey, and here's the 50-item thing, you got to go get all this stuff, or go to thisisbackpacking.com and in 5 minutes you can have it overnighted to you.
I see it. Actually, 7 minutes to be more accurate. I see the site. It does look beautiful. I can see why you'd be proud of it. All the gear you need for the next adventure, 7 steps, 7 minutes, 100% guarantee. And then there's a big, beautiful button underneath it that says equip yourself. And so why didn't that one work?
The timing was bad, I think would be the ultimate conclusion. Because it didn't really not work as much as it never was born. So I ended up building the company and we got really far. So you're probably looking in some archive, but the technology in the back that did decision making worked. But while I was in the process of birthing that company, Healthy Surprise happened. And once Healthy Surprise happened, I kind of had to look at these two different companies and say, which one, you know, I can only be married to one of these right now. Either got to go in, you know, a starting company is a full-time job to get this thing off the ground. And I kind of looked like it. I had these two rocket ships I had built and I had spent a lot more time on the thisisbackpacking.com one and it was more advanced, but we never turned it on. You know, we didn't know if the rocket would turn on when we said, let's go and people would buy anything, versus Healthy Surprise that, you know, once I launched it at this startup weekend event, we had customers.
Hours, right?
Yeah, within hours.
And not only that, but I looked at it. I did my research on this and it said, and I discovered you were basically it was a simple WordPress site. You used the Mercury theme from Friendly Themes. So it was just got a theme off the shelf, used WordPress, which is free, and you just got going and it took off.
Yeah. And what I did, which was really cool looking back, and I highly recommend this to anybody who's looking to start a company, was I figured out how to take a couple of different kind of best of class services and get them to talk to each other using webhooks. So So, you know, I mean, not everybody, but a lot of services have APIs and, it's very technical to get an API to talk to another one. I mean, you can do it, but you know,
what kind of webhooks did you need for this? So I, like you said, I used an archiving service to see what the site used to look like and I can see the design. I can see some of the functionality, but I couldn't really see what happened beyond the click to buy or beyond the click to select the size package you wanted.
Yeah. Well, so when we first saw, it's been an evolution. The WordPress site, in the beginning really just kicked, the customer over to a Recurly hosted credit card page that would take their payment details and create a Recurly record for them. And that worked. I mean, we got credit card numbers, we got paid, we had the money. I was able to connect it to my authorized.net account for This Is Backpacking, so I already kind of had like a credit card thing. I could take the money. Now a new entrepreneur could use Stripe. You can get that up and running really quickly. But then, like, what happened was after we had about 20 people sign up, somebody said, well, you know, the billing address for my credit card isn't where I want this to be shipped. And Recurly didn't support shipping addresses. So then I had to go and solve that problem. And I ended up going with Chargeify.com, who I'm with today, and I love them, and they're a great team. And I had to kind of migrate everybody over to that, which was a good lesson about payment migration. Thankfully, it was only like 20, 30 customers at the time. But I got those working. I used woofoo.com, which is a form generator, and they had an integration with Chargeify, using webhooks that was really, really great and seamless. So I was able to build a beautiful looking form in Woofoo that when someone filled out, Well, I step back. We hosted the form on WordPress, which was free. So WordPress could host. You just kind of put the JavaScript in the div, the code inside the page in WordPress, and then that would show the WooFoo form. And then when someone submitted that, it would create the record in Chargeify with all the information. So that allowed me to kind of have this whole flow that was sophisticated in a way that, I mean, we were using payments and recording all the information. It was all PCI compliant. But I didn't know anything about coding. I mean, I wasn't a developer. So that was a really cool way to kind of get that done and use some really sophisticated software, but not need a developer at $10,000 a month or have to know anything myself.
Yeah, it is the way you're describing it sounds really sophisticated, and it was even smarter, I think, than you described, because with WooFoo, you can have if-then decisions. If someone wants a small, then you can also offer them something else and even upgrades to the big based on that. You can charge, but WooFoo makes it dead simple. They just say, connect your payment processor to our form, and then they tell you they ask you what you want the form to do, and it's dead simple, but smart. You're looking at me kind of funny. Why?
No, I was checking something on my computer. I'm sure the connection was good.
Ah, okay. Why don't we take a moment here for a second? Just let me do this. I want to thank Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. He is my sponsor here at Mixergy, one and only. We are I cut back from sponsorship at the top of the interview and decided I'm just going to do one in the middle. And people in the past have asked what makes Scott so special. I think what's great about Scott is that he focuses on tech startups. That means he understands our world. He understands who we're going to get funding from. He understands what our investors are going to need from us. He understands where we're going to sell and what we need set up today for the day when we want to sell in the future or build our business in the future or hire, et cetera. So if you're a tech entrepreneur, you need a lawyer, check out Walker Corporate Law. And Scott even has his email address that you can use. It's just scott@walkercorporatelaw.com. I'm not sure why he wants to give out his email address, but he's the man. It's up to him. WalkerCorporateLaw.com. By the way, at what point did you incorporate?
I was incorporated from This Is Backpacking from before.
I see. And it's one of the first things that you did.
Let me just plug Scott. Scott actually came into the co-loft, which is where I was, the co-working space in Santa Monica that I was working at. And I don't know if he was a sponsor at the startup weekend that I launched Healthy Surprise, but I ended up meeting him and actually had a call with him, and we didn't end up working together, but I mean, the guy was great, and he was always super available, and I was really pleased when I saw that he was a sponsor of your show.
Oh, cool. Thanks. That's where I met him. I just was trying to figure out what to do with Mixergy. I saw he sponsored something. This is back when I was just doing events. I said, can I please ask you some questions about why you sponsor events, where I could get sponsors, the whole thing. This is before, years before I asked him to sponsor. And he took me to lunch. He paid. Usually I paid. He paid. And he just walked me through how to get sponsors, why he sponsors, what makes it work. Great guy. You started at Startup Weekend. Why did you launch at Startup Weekend when it seems like you had your idea before you even got there?
So I came out to California after the thing with my parents, and I didn't really know what I was going to do. I had the idea for this backpacking site, and I fell in love with this co-working space, Co-Loft, and I started working out of there. So I'm in Co-Loft, and it was a great, great, great place. I highly recommend to anybody that wants to just get involved in kind of entrepreneurship or lifestyle design to go to a co-working space. I just went to the one in Honolulu, the Box Jelly. They're fantastic. And it's just a great place to get motivated and meet people that are doing cool stuff. And one of the cool stuffs that was happening was Startup Weekend. They would do this every 6 months, I think was kind of the interval. And I did two of them and kind of got a mental model in my head of what it was, you know, what was reasonable to get accomplished at the time. And what I could get out of it. So I was working on this backpacking.com, really into it. And this third Startup Weekend came up, and I had some friends that invited me to join one of their projects. I wish I could give you the name of it, 'cause it was really funny. It was some kind of dating joke text website. And I said, you know what? That sounds great, but I want to kind of do something where I might make some money. And I had this idea for this subscription service for healthy snacks. And thought I could pull it off in the weekend, and it would just be this little side thing that would provide some passive income, and then it became an all-consuming dream.
I see. So even though the idea was yours, and you probably could have launched it on your own in private, there's something about doing it with a group of other people, kind of like anyone can go and run 5K, pretty much. But running with a group, running in an organized race, makes you more likely to do it, more likely to finish. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, you know, that's part of it. And I know you're a runner. I run too. I'm a big yoga guy. And like yoga is the type of thing, it's really easy to have a teacher walk you through it. But if you try to do it yourself, not the same result. And then the other part is the deadline. You know, having this hard pencils down, you're going to get it done. It really abstracts out, like, oh, is that the right shade of blue for the logo? You know what I mean? It's like that just isn't part of the discussion because we've got all these other things. And it makes the brain really kind of curate what decisions have to be made. And it just kind of can get you to do things really, really fast and effectively.
How long did it take you to code up the site?
Well, you know, we started, I think, around 8 p.m. on Friday. And we had the first... the first credit card rang through, I think, like at 11:04 on Saturday morning. So we weren't done with, you know, the entire site. And we still aren't to this day. I mean, I'm constantly improving it and testing stuff. But we got it up pretty quickly.
And you had your first customer the following morning. Before we get into how you got some sales at the event, here's my thinking on where this idea came from. Subscriptions just make so much sense because you get dependable revenue, right? And you were seeing maybe things like Blissmo and some of the other boxes out there, and you said, I like health food. There isn't a good one for me. I like the model. I like health food. I like these customers. I'm just going to put it together and take it to an area that I like.
Yeah, that's kind of it. You know, I don't remember at the time having heard of Blissmo. Or really any of the subscription companies. I think it was like a kind of a mutual, I forget the scientific term, when like things kind of spontaneously, you know, are kind of invented at the same time.
The environment is just so good for an idea that many people have that idea at once.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. I mean, like, you know, so like Healthy Surprise was one of the first, or if not the first healthy snack company. Then I found out there was another one that started almost simultaneously with me called lollyhop.com, which went out of business. But, you know, I kind of discovered them after we launched and they were kind of doing a similar thing. So it kind of seemed to be like the time for these subscription services to kind of come out. So I don't want to say it was totally my idea. Maybe I'd heard about it in passing and someone discussed and it was kind of there. But it was more of like, yeah, the subscription model seemed really well, seemed to be really good. And it also fit into this kind of thing I've seen in my life repeating where I'm curating products for other people, which was kind of the same thing that the backpacking was. Now, if you think about it, I knew what was kind of good, so I went and found all that for you and just presented that value for you. So that was kind of the recurring theme. And then it also, I was really conscious about trying to design my life. And I was, you know, I thought this could be a business that would be relatively passive and kind of run itself. That ended up not being the case, and we can talk about that, but at the time, I thought that was, you know, it was a good fit, you know, into my life.
It does kind of seem like the ideal passive income, that you get people to sign up and their money comes in every month and you have someone ship it out and you can travel the world and not have to do much work. And I just wrote a note to come back to passive and find out why. I also have a note to come back to sales and how you got them. But since you brought up that so many other competitors went out of business, both in this health food space and in other related businesses that were subscription-based boxes, you're in it. Why do you think others didn't do well where you're still around and growing?
I think it's two reasons. One, I don't think they were priced right. Most companies in the subscription box realm are about, you know, under $20. And I just don't really know how you make money doing that. You know, I mean there's just real costs involved with shipping a product, having a cardboard box, you know, putting things into the box. And then you got to acquire the customer and keep that. So, you know, if you're making $2 or $3 a box, I mean, even if the market on a percentage basis, it's good, you know, to make real money, you need to have tens of thousands of boxes. And that's like that's a lot of work. So I think it was not being priced right. And that's also driven by the fact that most other companies do sample stuff and they get their product for free, so they can't really charge a lot. We pay for stuff. I think a lot of the other companies raised money and built up these big teams, and that allowed them to be a little more bloaty than me. I run a really, really, really lean ship, and we've been hungry for a long time. So I've learned how to do a lot of stuff very effectively without a big team. So, you know, the burn rate's real small. We go for the high end of the market, and we have profit in there, so we can make some money. And you know, I'm not trying to be a billion-dollar business. I don't think Holly Surprise will be a billion-dollar business in the next couple of years, but it's making money, and I'm having the time of my life, and I'm being interviewed by one of my heroes, and I'm in Hawaii.
Thank
so
you.
Things are working out pretty well.
The first sale – well, thank you. Actually, you listen to Mixergy.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I'm asking not because I'm so surprised that you would. I want to know what you got out of it, because you obviously built something incredible here. I want more viewers like you, and I want to understand what you get out of it so that I can do more of that.
You know, to be honest, I don't listen to it as much as I used to. I've had these phases in my life, and it's not mm-hmm. talking about you that the product is not good. I've just kind of moved through different phases in my life where I've done deep dives into areas. I got really into personal development. Health and wellness is kind of now is the thing. And business and entrepreneurship was a really big focus in my life when I was trying to figure this out. And I just wanted to learn from people that did it. You know, I read so many books about, you know, business and leadership and all this stuff. And I find that in a lot of these domains, personal development included, once you read so many of the books, the same themes and memes start to repeat themselves. And it's kind of like platitudes, and people write 300 pages to say, you know, do these five things. When you are interviewing an entrepreneur, you're getting like the real deal, how we did it, and here's the problems, and it's more applicable, it's more real. It's not just like these kind of like high level, you know, principles. So your podcast was very influential in getting exposed to entrepreneurs and what worked and how they thought and how they dealt with the problems. And then the other podcast that I really liked was Stanford's ETL, Entrepreneurial Thought Leaders. I listened to, you know, maybe 100 of those as well. And, you know, it's a little bit different format because they're not as interviewee as you are. But I would say that was the big takeaway. Just hearing the smartest people who succeeded or, you know, failed. But usually if they're on your show, they did something that you can learn from. And just downloading that into my brain.
Yeah, I love the story format. And I tried to get people from Stanford to help me out because I used to love that podcast before I ever started Mixergy. And I just couldn't connect with them. But I always admired their work. I'm glad that you did too and that you're recommending them here.
Yeah, well, I mean, but they're lost because, I mean, it would have been great for them.
It's too bad. It would have been great to partner with them. And I think I was even talking to or tried to connect with one of the students there, and it's too bad for both of us. But I still admire their work.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe it was the best thing that happened because now you're this force and you're your own independent thing. And if you'd been with them, you might be overshadowed by them a little bit. So
you know what? Kind of like what you were saying with your parents. There was a period there where I was thinking, I should just do Mixergy type these interviews for other sites. And I tried to get TechCrunch to pay attention. I tried to work with other people, and it just was such a pain in the butt that I said, I'll just stick with my own site. And it made it harder in the beginning, but it's better now.
Right. That's the story of life.
So let's get back to your story and how you got customers. When you walked out of that startup weekend, do you remember how much revenue or how many customers you had?
Yeah, we So I actually went around LA and bought boxes, and I bought snacks, and I got some stencils and some spray paint, and I literally spray painted a stencil of a little Healthy Surprise logo on these boxes. And it's almost embarrassing now to look back at them. I have pictures. It's actually kind of funny. And I sold out. I mean, I had like $700 worth of boxes worth of product, which, you know, at the time was a big... It was a big, you know, this was just a little startup weekend thing. I spent $100 to go do it. And then I'm buying all these, you know, these snacks. I cleared out like Whole Foods and all these little Revolution, all these little cafes in LA. thinking I was going to sell it, but it seemed to be the right amount. I mean, we sold out, which was kind of a cool thing to say. And, you know, I don't know. We probably had like 20 to 30 customers at the end of the event.
From the event itself.
Yeah. It's about 100 participants plus the audience there. So, I mean, it was, I mean, I'd love to say Healthy Surprise is the greatest thing on the planet. And I think it's really good. But there's also this energy at Startup Weekend where everybody wants you to succeed and everybody's helping. And everyone's like, yeah, you know, I'll buy one, sure. And, you know, and then but that's part of the magic of Startup Weekend. You get that and then you get some press and you get a little bit of buzz and you kind of get a little like a little shove. You know what I mean? They kind of throw you out of the nest a little bit. And I was able to flap wings and start to fly. Most people don't. But it's more than if you and I just sat down on Friday and said, hey, let's build a website over the weekend. You know, at the end of the weekend, you're just kind of, we'd be looking at each other like, okay, now what?
So then now what? How did you get the next group of customers?
Oh man, that's a good question. I think the next group of customers was friends and family still, because it was kind of like, okay, everybody, I just did this thing and it's been in this article and I posted it on Facebook and Twitter and that kind of added a little bit of juice. And then the Startup Weekend, like buzz that kind of happened, I'd say came the next wave of maybe 20 to 50 people. And then from that, then we started getting bloggers that wanted to review the product. The subscription thing was really, really new. And we were getting some write-ups about that, about being, you know, one of these first companies in this new space, Subcom. And then you know, blogger reviews, which was still to this day is great for us.
Subcom meaning subscription commerce.
Yep.
And bloggers, do they usually want a review just so they could try it themselves?
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, if they hear that a site gives out a free box if you say you're going to review it, you get a lot of people who are interested in it.
And so, how do you know who to give it to?
You know, there's not like a really good way to, there's no black and white, you know, litmus test really. We kind of evaluate the site, look at the interaction, look at the engagement, look at the metrics, you know, how many fans do they have. And it's ironic because, you know, I know you can buy fans, but yet if someone has them, they even care enough to buy them or they have them.
Right.
You know? So there's ways to kind of like, to kind of gauge that, look at previous reviews of what they've done, see if they've had any interaction. And a lot of it is just, you know, throwing a lot of stuff at the wall, you know, knowing that one of them is going to hit and a lot of them are going to fall short. And, you know, there's also the mom in Louisiana who has 300 people that go to her site, but they really go to her site and they really read it. You know what I'm saying? Like she might have more of an impact than someone who's got 10,000 or 100,000 people, but it's just the wrong mix or the wrong match. You know what I mean? Like my product doesn't resonate with them. So, you know, we evaluate, but I tend to err more on the side of like, let's get the product out. I believe in the product. I think it's really good. And, you know, the more it's out there and the more that people are talking about it, the more Google sees it, that's really a win for us.
Here's what I've seen for some sites that have talked about you. Greatest.com, run by Derek Flansreich, a former Mixergy interviewee. They did a post about you. That seems to have sent traffic to you. Subscription Box Talk, Hello Foxy, Vegan News. Even like a little site, thescienceofhappy.blogspot.co.uk. Even that seems to have sent over some traffic and some meaningful business. The other thing that I've seen that does well for you is Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook's been really good.
What are you doing on Facebook that's actually sending you considerable traffic?
Well, we create a lot of original content. People like it and share it a lot. It's a moving target, you know, figuring out what works and what doesn't. We've tried all kinds of different things. But that works and we track that. So every now and then we'll get a hit from Facebook working. We do Facebook ads. Which can be effective. Again, that's all kinds of online ads are really a mixture of art and science. And then we'll do like promotions or kind of offers on Facebook, and those have a big impact as well.
What kind?
Like it was Veterans Day, and we'll you know do we did I think $10 off of a gift box. Black Friday we'll probably have a great special which is coming up. So something like that. I mean, like last year. for New Year's, we did something for New Year's. I think pretty much just the Facebook post had over 100 signups, which for a year ago, I mean, that was really big for us. And still, 100 signups from one event would be great for us today. So
100 signups, meaning 100 people sign up for subscriptions or for individual boxes?
Subscriptions, yeah.
Subscriptions, wow. Veterans Day, I see a post here on your Facebook page. Happy Veterans Day. This, like you said, $10 off. But I also see four soldiers, each with a box. They take the photo and send it over to you?
Yeah, the guy did, actually. He wrote me an email. This is really, I mean, kind of the big thing that I love about this business is that I got this email from this guy, and he basically said, you know, I'm here in Afghanistan. It's a hellhole. You know, people are trying to kill me. It's a million degrees out here. But my wife set up this subscription, and I get this box every month. It's just like, I really look forward to it. And there's not a lot of things that I look forward to over here. You know, it was kind of like I said, well, that's so cool. You know, could you take a picture of the box, you know, in Afghanistan? And he sent me that photo. And I'm really proud of that photo because, you know, there's a lot of things going there. I mean, the business is real. It worked. It's helping people. It's international. And it's helping the people that I think need it the most. You know, I mean, we have a lot of soldiers that are on bases that say that the food is bad at the base. It's really expensive or unavailable off the base. And because of the APO system, which is the U.S. government basically gives every soldier a local P.O. box in Virginia. And we mail, anyone can do this, you mail the product to that address, and then they put it on the cargo jets and take it.
So you don't have to pay to get it all the way out there.
Yeah, so it's like $7 to ship this guy his box to Afghanistan, you know?
So that one got 225 likes and 11 shares. Another thing that you did that did really well is win a free box. Like and share this post for a chance to win a free box, a free month. And that got 560 shares, 373 people liked it. So yeah, that gives us a sense of what you're doing on Facebook.
Yeah, the win a free box is always a winner. People like free stuff.
Yeah, especially when it's tangible.
I mean, especially when it's delicious, man. I mean, you know, my dad once told me, if you want to take anybody will let you buy them lunch. You know, I mean, like you can always get this in your stomach.
What about finding the product? Is that an easy thing to do? Is that something we should spend some time on?
Well, you know, this kind of ties into it being passive, because the whole idea sounds great, as far as in lifestyle design, and I have this business, and while we're talking, someone will probably give me money over the internet, you know, mm-hmm. And that still kind of is magical to me that works, and I've got this thing set up, and I've got people in LA that will ship the box tomorrow morning, and it will go out. But you know, finding the product is not passive. In a way, I kind of feel like I wouldn't put myself in his company, but you know, I gotta kind of be like a Jay-Z, and I gotta keep turning out hits every month. You know what I mean? The box has to be good.
Because if I don't like it this month, I'm just done with it.
Yeah, you can cancel, right?
I could.
Everybody's voting. You know, it's like a referendum every month. Like, did we like it? Are we gonna stay? Are we gonna renew? Or not. So, you know, my girlfriend has a product, givemethedirt.com, and it's this tooth powder that's really kind of unique, and it's like a real special thing. But, you know, she can make 1,000 of them, and then she's got 1,000 of them. And if 1,000 orders come in, she sends out 1,000 of these tooth powders. But that's it. You know what I mean? She's invented it. It's great. It works. She can make 1,000,000 of them, and it just sits there. Every month, you know, we've got to come up with a new box. So I've gotten really creative about how to kind of pacify, not in a peace way, but in a non-act, you know, make it passive, the process. And it involves a lot of planning and very careful logistics and some cool software. But, you know, until you get to that point, which has taken me a long time and a lot of thinking and learning, you know, every month we got to do it all over again.
What do you mean? What's the software do that helps you figure out ahead of time if what you're going to send out is a hit?
No. We not as much as far as figuring out whether it's going to be a hit, but in terms of doing the logistics so that we can surprise everybody every month, but not have to keep making the same one over and over again.
I see.
So the basic idea is if we generate enough unique SKUs, and we tag everyone by what box number they're on. So like, this is your third box and we have 20 different SKUs. We can cycle you through. So say after the 20th month, you'd fall back to number one again, and you probably won't remember what was even in the first box after, you know, 20 months.
Yeah.
But to manage the inventory and deal with spoilage and then the cash flow problems of ordering all this product and warehousing it all and predicting growth and demand and churn, there's a lot going on there to do that in a way, especially when we don't have any venture money. And it's like, okay.
So how did you get to build that, considering that you're a guy who, when I kept saying coded this, coded that, you use Wufoo, basically. You use the Wufoo's ability to plug in with other software, so you're not a developer. How did you code up this process that allowed you to keep things from spoiling, allow you to manage who gets what?
I'm not a developer. I probably could be one now. I've taught myself so much by doing it, and I can write PHP and JavaScript, and actually the whole healthysurprise.com front end is me. And now the back end is the new software we just launched last week.
It's a new what? Sorry?
It's a whole new back end.
Okay.
That does all this stuff. So, you know, after 2 years of running the business, the thing was pretty smooth and running really, really well. But there were still these kind of loose ends of annoyances that require a person to do things. So I've built a total bespoke Ruby on Rails application that kind of does everything I wanted to do, and it handles all of these logistical problems. I can't code in Rails or Ruby. I actually have a team that I manage, and I kind of work as the project manager now in Pivotal Tracker, really writing the stories and doing the bug testing and moving the product forward in that way. So, you know, I have the vision of what I want to do, and that's almost just a full-time job managing the designers and developers to get them to, you know, to move the ball down the field.
Who ships the boxes?
What?
Who ships the boxes?
I have my chief of operations is in our fulfillment center in LA, and he ships the boxes every day.
And you have an actual performance center. Does that mean someone's house, or are we now at a place where there's warehouse space?
So I have a loft in downtown LA, where I converted about a third of it to my apartment. A third of it is a warehouse, and then a third of it is the office.
I see.
It was always a dream of mine to kind of have this compound where I lived, and then smart people would come in and like hang out with me, and I could kind of run my little business from there. So I did that.
You know what? I was at the office of Voice Bunny recently, and I thought it was going to be this big office because the company is so big. It's right out of his house, and he has the whole stand-up desks for multiple people. He's got the big screen up on the wall, very similar to what you're talking about. And when you're in there, the energy is just, it's exciting. It makes you want to do something as soon as you get up. But now you're not there.
Yeah, it's the energy of Los Angeles traffic that makes you not want to go anywhere. And I mean, like, I didn't want to have an office and have to deal with that every day. So
yeah.
The home office hybrid really, really works. But you're right, I'm not in Los Angeles.
So tell me where you are right now.
I'm in the North Shore of Oahu, in just outside of Honolulu in Hawaii. I'm in a treehouse. I've actually just stepped out of a treehouse because we had technical problems.
Yeah, at the top of the interview when I said I was dealing with all kinds of tech issues, it's actually you who was dealing with it because of the bad internet connection there. I asked you to install software and that got all crazy. Thanks for doing all that. But sorry, you're in a treehouse.
Yeah, and this actually brings up a good point. Because I was moving to try to get a good signal, I didn't bring the charger.
And we're about to run out of battery?
Can I just run it and get it in for 2 seconds?
Yeah, go for it. Actually, how much time do you have? I think we're almost done anyway.
I got 7%.
Oh, we're totally good.
We're good? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. We're fine. So can you actually really travel and move? I'm always suspicious when people say, Andrew, you could do Mixergy from anywhere. Because frankly, I have set up. You know, it doesn't seem like it, but every business ends up having extra stuff that you need to do. And we're much more productive. I've got now Anne-Marie here working right across from me. I think we're more productive because we're working in the same room than if we were working remotely.
Yeah, I think about that a lot. So I've got people in my office every single day, and we don't have like offices. So it's open seating kind of floor plan. Mm-hmm. And I can just roll my chair over and look at the screen and say, hey, look at this. You have that. You kind of have this momentum of like, I'm with the person every day and we're doing it and we're working, we're grinding out. And that's real. And in my kind of command center, I have two giant, you know, 27-inch screens, and I have it all set up when I'm doing my stuff. Now I'm on an 11-inch MacBook Air, which is not ideal for coding all this stuff. Can it be done? Yes. You know, I mean, I can't spin the flywheel as fast when I'm in Hawaii than when I am in LA. But then I'm in Hawaii. You know, so that's kind of the decision you have to make for yourself and what you want from your life and your business. And if, you know, if you have investors, I think that's really important too. You know, like what is the expectation they're going to have as far as what you can deliver?
What kind of revenues are you guys doing now?
So we're probably doing around $50,000 a month.
How much?
$50,000.
$50,000 a month. And yeah. Is it profitable?
Hmm?
How profitable?
Well, in our business, I've got a big fixed expense, which is, you know, the warehouse, the people, the rent, internet. And then we have, you know, the variable cost of each box. So once we hit kind of the nut, it all drops down to the bottom, which is great. I've actually... So that being said, I've covered the nut. We're making money, which is great. And as we grow, I mean, it just gets better.
Maybe this is another reason why the funded companies didn't do well. That for them, $100,000, even $200,000 a month just isn't enough. They need millions a month, or else they've gotta give it up because they're not going to get more funding. They're not going to be able to continue.
Yeah, I mean, I looked. A competitor went out of business, and I went and looked. I thought maybe I could hire some of their people, so I went on LinkedIn. And I did a search for them, and there was like 40 matches. And it was like, you know, head of product design, photographer, social media expert, like vice president of marketing, sales, you know, interior designer, boom, boom. It was like 10-to-1 revenue generation versus expense. And that makes sense. I mean, if you raise $5 million, you're not raising that $5 million to gain interest on it. They want you to spend it so you'll grow and you can return $50 million on it. That requires a big team and a you know, a big bloat to kind of to do that. It's just a different approach. So I think for a lot of these companies, I know for a fact that their intention was, I don't really care if we're making any money on the first boxes. Let's just sign up a lot of people, show this big month-over-month growth, and then go flip it and make a couple million bucks. But then the fundamentals weren't there. You know, they might have signed up a bunch of people by giving away the free, you know, the first free month, and they had all these subscribers, but
right.
They weren't making any money. They burned out. No one wanted the Series A crunch. No one wanted to give them another $1 million. And then they're gone. And, you know, we're still here. We're not making millions of dollars yet, but we're making money and having fun. And
one helping last people, thing.
The biggest thing. Yeah.
You were on Olark, which is that chat box that pops up where you get to talk to people who are on your site, and someone from Abu Dhabi was on. Can you tell people what happened there? Because I think that's another opportunity that I think a big part of your business came from that.
Yeah, so I installed Olark at Startup Weekend, and it would tell you if someone was on your site, where they were, and where they came from. And there was this guy from Abu Dhabi. I said, hey, you know, what are you doing on Healthy Surprise from Abu Dhabi? The site was about 2 weeks old, was not that impressive. And he said, oh, I went on this blog and I clicked here and I got to your site. And it was like the magic of the internet worked. And looking back, it proved that to me that it could work. I mean, that was a big thing for me to realize, like, oh, wow, people can just come from 10,000 miles away and come onto your website. And while I was chatting with this guy, he ended up buying our largest box, the $99 a month combo box. And it just kind of hit me that night that, wow, like this guy from as far away in the world just bought the most expensive product on this website that really isn't that impressive. I've got a thing here. And that was really the event that led me to shut down This Is Backpacking and go full force on Healthy Surprise.
So we lost the connection, but we're back. And that's why, Joe, you're in a different place and I might be looking a little bit different. So I thought actually that this guy from Abu Dhabi, it led you to start doing corporate sales. How did you get into corporate sales? Because apparently that's a big part of your business.
So it kind of happened with one of our vendors, actually. The first time it came to us was they said they were having a board meeting and they really loved, we had done a promotion with them and they were really proud of it. And they wanted to give one of the boxes to everyone at their board. When they came and sat for the at the meeting, one of the boxes would be there. So they ordered like 20, 30 boxes. And then we started getting more and more. Someone, you know, wrote in and said, hey, I got 100 boxes I want to send out to people on this project. Can we send you a spreadsheet of this? Wow. And that's been a growing part of the business. And it's good because, you know, the B2B customer tends to be less price sensitive and more service oriented. You know, I like to think about it as a when customer who has an abundance of money and a shortage of time versus a how much customer who's got more time than money.
And I like the way you do it too. When I click the button that says send a gift, I could see the options pop up nicely and everything I need's right there. Congratulations on the success with this business. I hope I get to see you in person at some point, or someone in my audience will get to meet you in person. I always say this to the audience. If there's an interview that you got a lot out of, that you benefited from, that you enjoyed, find a way to tell the guest. Tomorrow I'm going to have dinner with Justin Mayers, who heard me say something like that in an interview with the founder of DuckDuckGo. He contacted him and the two of them ended up writing a book together. It's that kind of stuff that happens. If there's something that you got out of this interview, just say thank you and you'll see where it goes. It's magical almost. Just thank you. And I'm going to do it right now.
Can I echo that point?
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the biggest things when I started this business wasn't just could I make a lot of money, but it was really like, what would it mean for my lifestyle and who would it connect me with and who would respect me because of what I've done? And like being on this interview with you is a big accomplishment for myself. And I'd like to encourage, I don't think we get a lot of that in our culture about thinking about how it's going to impact your life versus is it going to just make money? So one of the aspects of that, the reason I'm living this lifestyle is not just for money as much as awesome experiences and great people. And I really love meeting great people. And if somebody wanted to ask me a question, joewinky@gmail.com. Send me an email. I'd love to hear from you.
Oh, cool. Thanks for doing that. Thanks for doing this interview too. And thank you all for watching. Bye.